Recording live from somewhere between the USA and Mexico. I'm taking a short vacation with my wife and I snuck away for a little bit just to record the This Month in Forensics podcast for May 2018. I'm Phil Moore and here's a few things from the last month that I wanted to talk about. Of course, this isn't everything. The industry puts out a massive amount of content every week, so for everything that I can find, you can head over to thisweekinforensics.com. Quick note, I may or may not be putting out a full weekly this weekend. It's more likely I'll be posting the links for the next couple of weeks as life will be a little bit full on the second half of my conference tour, but more on that later. Let's talk quickly about some software updates. So Berla released Ivy 2.0 and Ivy Mobile 2.0. I haven't really played with the tool, but I figure 2.0 is a major release, so it's worth mentioning that if you do deal with infotainment systems as part of your work, it's a tool to check out. On the APFS front, both Xway's 19.7 Preview 2B and NK7.07 added APFS support, both of whom I don't think have as complete support as Blacklight does on basically the Mac and Windows platforms. But, you know, some support is better than nothing. And that way, at least you'll be able to throw in your APFS volumes into one of those other major tools and work around it. There is another workaround for getting those other unsupported tools to work using the Paragon driver, and then you can mount it as a physical volume in unsupported tools, but it's good to have native support when possible. Cellbrite released version 7.5 of their UFED line of products and added a new physical extraction method for Android devices, as well as improvements to other password bypass and data extraction methods. The new extraction method is called Smart ADB. I'm not sure what's smart about it or how it works, but it's interesting to play around with, see how it works any better than some of the other physical extraction methods. Being able to get a physical of an Android device can be very important, get some of the app data, and also the added password bypasses will be a welcome addition for law enforcement. Microsystemation released XLY 7.7.1. So that they can ingest the gray key images, which gray key's been making a bit of a splash recently and distributing to law enforcement. And also Blackbag released a tool to convert the gray key images so that they can be imported into Blacklight, which will be very useful. From an analysis perspective, Matt at Bit of Hex took a look at some memory artifacts that were left behind by a user running the Tor browser bundle on an external USB drive to access webmail and a Tor hidden service. I haven't really read the article thoroughly recently, give a really thorough workup of it, but most of the artifacts that were listed in the situation are really only going to reside in memory. So especially if you don't have that USB drive, the memory analysis and collection aspect of this specific scenario is going to be very useful. So Matt's written a couple of posts about that. Gary at Salt Forensics shares some iOS forensic artifacts relating to user activity. I would like to see more posts like this showing user activity, file access, knowledge, etc. We have a decent idea of what these artifacts will look like for Windows, for example. But being able to say whether a picture or video has been viewed on other platforms such as iOS and Android is always going to be useful. So Gary worked through, I think it was 5 different apps, to show when a user had interacted and what that interaction looked like on those apps. Jason Hale at Digital Forensics Stream examines the Microsoft Windows Partition Diagnostic event log found on Windows 10 systems with respect to USB device tracking. People might not know, but Jason released a tool called USB Detective that tracks a lot of that USB device information and puts it all into one place. And Jason shows that the event ID 1006 contains not only the manufacturer, model, and serial number, but also the volume boot record of that device that was connected to the system. So Windows 10 does a lot of things to hinder USB device examinations, primarily wiping out their records on update as well as event logs, but you know, it's a nice addition to have as long as you're able to recover that information, and maybe it might be useful too. Yogesh Khatri at Swift Forensics describes the bash session files found on macOS since 10.11, which is El Capitan, and I'm sure later versions as well. These look really useful compared to the standard bash history, which can get a bit confusing if a user has multiple terminal windows open at one time. If you deal with Macs a lot, especially with skilled users who are going to be dropping into terminal, then it might be worth familiarizing yourself with these session files on top of the usual bash history file. Windows 10 was updated, and that dropped a timeline feature, which meant that a few people dived into it. So Gary at Salt Forensics, who I just mentioned, and Alex Caithness at CCL shared some of their initial testing. Hideki Ihara at port 139 blog, at the port 139 blog, looked into the activities cache database used in the feature and asked if anyone has identified the data stored in the file shell link field. And he showed that some of the data appeared to reside in the database after it's removed from the timeline GUI. Shortly after the feature was released, Eric Zimmerman released a dedicated tool called WXTCMD, parsed the timeline database. I don't think anyone was surprised that it took him a day or two to get out. And then also in the recent update to Axiom, which is version 2.1, Magnet added timeline parsing, as well as, on a side note, HFS Plus 5.2 support, which is always great to add more support for something like 5.2. Unfortunately, that HFS kind of thing is going to be moving away, but that doesn't mean we're not going to see those type of devices, that file system, still pop up in older cases. I think iOS 11.4 was released, but I'm not really internet connected now, so I haven't really seen what people have been saying about it. But that being said, during the month, Elcomsoft warned that they found indications that there was a USB restricted mode that was going to be in effect in this version. There was a bit of debate about whether that would actually come to pass, and I guess I'll find out, hopefully in the next week or two, whether that's actually been added to this version. But the USB restricted mode was going to basically lock out the USB port if the device hadn't been unlocked after a week, which is going to hinder law enforcement effort because they'll have to use any of the bypasses, for example, to download that device quickly within that week, which might be very difficult. So it'll be interesting to see if iOS 11.4 or a later version implements that feature. Paul Sanderson's book on SQLite Forensics was released, and so far I've heard very good things about it. It's on, you know, one of the lists of books that I need to pick up soon and have a read through. And Alexei Brugnoni has written a review of the book on his blog for people that would like to have a quick look at that. SANS updated a few of their posters for the 500, 508, and 585 courses, which is the Windows Forensic Analysis, the Advanced Windows Analysis and Incident Response, and the Mobile Phone Forensics course. And these are great references to have, especially during Net Wars for those that are going to be competing in the Net Wars tournaments in the near future. And they're all available on the SANS website. As a side note, because the 508, which is the Hunt Evil poster, was updated, Richard Davis also went through and updated his Windows Process Genealogy video, and I'll have to rewatch that again to keep up. There was a few imaging devices released in the last month, and I think there's going to be a couple more released in the next week or so at Techno Security. But Atola released their new, more portable imaging device called the Task Force, which has lots of ports for concurrent imaging and restoring and the usual damaged device support goodness. The Falcon Neo was also released. I had a very brief look at Enfuse last week. It's just an updated version. I think I'm not really sure about the additional features that were added. And then Evermetry, it was also they also released some hardware and an updated version of their existing hardware to help facilitate the imaging and processing of images taken with them Evermetry. Hardware to say, apparently. On the recent Tolino talk, Jason spoke about the benefits of using a fast SSD drive. I guess that's redundant, an SSD. One of the things that Jason mentioned was how choosing the right equipment can really speed up your acquisition and analysis. One of the examples he gave was a phone acquisition that took 45 minutes on one piece of hardware and then 2 to 3 when using, you know, a better system. And it shows that spending a little bit of time thinking about I/O and processing speeds may be worth the effort. It's something I try to encourage with people is thinking about the process that you're going to run, and where the bottlenecks are going to be. For example, I had a recent examination that I had to perform a review of an image over the network and didn't have time to pull the image down locally to speed it up, but I did have the image locally on a different machine, ran the processing on the local copy, transferred the case over, saved a boatload of time. Yes, I just noticed that I'm on a boat while I said saving a boatload of time. Anyway, Brett Shavers uploaded a video on some of the tips for getting a job in the DFR field. There was a video and there was also a post and a few pages report that he wrote. That checklist and paper and things you can do to get into the field is quite useful for those that are trying to break in. And it's also quite reminiscent of a talk that I just gave, I guess, on personal branding. I thought that the talk that I gave was fairly well received for the small number of attendees, but it was, you know, it's a very niche topic, and it's good that people like Brett are talking about encouraging more people into the field and how they can you know, get in, because, you know, it's a field that's obviously growing, and so the more people that we've got, the more eyes we've got on things, the better. Aaron Walters at Volatility Labs announced two volatility contests. Usually they put on just the one to build volatility plugins with a bunch of prizes. This year they've added a new competition thanks to a donation that they received, which is the volatility analysis contest. So this contest is intended to encourage people to share the creative ways that they are using volatility to augment their analysis efforts. So Magnet Forensics offered up some money to sponsor that competition, and as a result, that's the second contest. I like these kind of contests because they encourage people to progress the field a little bit further at a time, just a little bit. So CTFs are really good, for example. They show people where their education is lacking, and that subsequently will sell training, but it doesn't necessarily expand the field. So these kind of competitions, the take something, write it up, and we'll judge the best entries, I think there's multiple prizes, are a good way to get people thinking as well as improve things. Alexi Brignoni has started a new blog translating DF articles into Spanish for those that need it, and he put out a call to the community to contribute articles, and hopefully that can help the readers build up their capabilities. The reason I wanted to mention this was that a lot of the posts that I go through every week are written in English. There's a few, I think there's a couple written in Japanese, a couple written in Spanish, and I don't really want to restrict the number of people that can contribute to this community by saying, no, you have to speak English, and that's where everything is kind of centered around. So I'd like to see, you know, other people putting up their hands to host other languages and translate them. So that way, all those people that feel like they can't contribute because their English isn't good, or you know, they might not even speak English at all, can at least put something out, and that can be pushed out to the rest of the world. Google Translate does work really well in those instances. It's not fantastic, but you know, you can make it work. Lastly, I was going to just provide, a quick update on me for the last week or two. So I went to a couple of conferences in Las Vegas. I started at the Magnet User Summit. It was great fun. It was good meeting a few people that I'd spoken to and getting to hang out in person, as well as hang out with the Magnet guys. The live forensic lunch and the CTF put on by Dave and Matthew was also really fun. The only feedback that I guess I've got, it was a difficult choice between the CTF and taking the labs and talks. But I can't really complain. I did fairly well on the CTF. So I think I picked the right one. From there, I headed over to Enfuse and spent the next 3 days looking at what OpenText had on offer. The highlight had to have been watching the former FBI director, James Comey, speak. He was very funny. He was a very good speaker. He was very articulate. And he spoke about the importance of knowing your role and its impact, and how to speak to people, how leaders should act, and that was really insightful. There were a few talks at Enfuse that I liked, particularly there was an IoT one put on by John that was quite good. And there was the roadmap of what OpenText has planned for EnCase, which was quite interesting and illuminating, as well as, picking some of the other smaller sessions. I think I probably could have picked some better sessions, as some people said they had some really good insights from some of the speakers. So I think checking out the slides, which are available earlier on, would have probably been a good idea. Most of the vendors there were hardware vendors for computers and imaging devices. There weren't really many software vendors there, so it did feel a bit more like a user summit than an industry conference. I'll be quite interested to see whether there's one again next year, as there was kind of a rumor going around that that might be the last Enfuse and they might be merging it in with the OpenText conference, so I guess time will tell. Next week is Techno Security at Myrtle Beach and the SAN Summit. I haven't been to Techno before, but as a non-vendor-based conference, apparently one of the largest vendor halls, I'm really looking forward to see what's going on and of course, speaking to anyone that wants to chat. So I'll be there. If anyone's listening that wants to come say hi, please do so. And right after that, I'm heading over to the SAN Summit in Austin, where I'll be speaking about my Google Home research, as well as sitting on the Forensics 500, the Windows Forensic Analysis class. So yeah, again, if you're over there, and want to hang out, just yeah, reach out and say hi. And that's all for the last month. Of course, this isn't everything. For everything I've found, you can head over to thisweekinforensics.com. Shout out to the Patreon supporters, all those people that have donated and encouraged me to keep going. I really appreciate it. If you get a bit of value out of my work and want to give a little bit of value back, the link is in the post below, as well as the top of the page, on all of the other places, I guess. The benefit of being a patron is patron is that you get the show notes with the links for everything that I've mentioned, as well as the time codes, which may make it easier to look it up at a later date. Alternatively, there is also the donations page for one-off transfers for the people that have requested that. If you've got any suggestions or recommendations, you can let me know on Twitter. I'm at Phil Moore. And a special thanks to my friend Jeff, who's Animatic on SoundCloud, for letting me use his tracks. And again, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next month.